This week on Vaticano, learn more about the recent financial reforms Pope Francis has implemented at the Vatican. Sit down with Maria Teresa Manelli, Padre Pio's spiritual daughter, to find out what he was like as a confessor. And travel with us to Kazakhstan to the shrine of Our Lady Queen of Peace, the only Marian shrine in Central Asia. For this and more, Vaticano starts now. In Assisi, the hometown of Pope Francis's namesake, from September the 22nd to the 24th, the first in-person meeting for the Economy of Francesco took place. Pope Francis participated in the events when he traveled to Assisi on the final day, September the 24th. The Economy of Francesco takes up Pope Francis's 2019 appeal to young people to meet, discuss, brainstorm, and share ideas for a better world economy that puts the human person at its center. In 2019, Pope Francis asked economists and young people to give life to the idea of a different kind of economy, one that is more attentive to the weakest members of society and is not focused exclusively on the gain of material wealth. Due to the pandemic, the global meetings have taken place online. The final meeting in Assisi is also the first one in person.
These young people are coming here to Assisi from all over the world.
Archbishop Sorrentino of Assisi describes the Pope's appeal to young economists and entrepreneurs regarding these events as the need to enter into a covenant to change today's economy and to give a soul to the economy of tomorrow, with the figure of St. Francis of Assisi being a model and an inspiration. The Holy Father has regularly criticized Western capitalism as nurturing inequality and tearing the social fabric of society. His Economy of Francesco seems to follow this philosophy. Catholic physicians throughout the world, or the FIAMC, the International Federation of Associations of Catholic Doctors, held their 26th Congress in Rome from September the 15th to the 17th. The first Association of Catholic Physicians was founded in France in 1884, during the pontificate of Pope Leo XIII. This was an era of strong anti-Catholicism in France, Germany, and England in the West. The theme for this gathering was medicine, reparative or transformative, the mission of the Christian physician. It focused on current topics, such as conscientious objection and the use of artificial intelligence in the medical field. Physicians held panels to discuss the role of the doctor and how to uphold Catholic moral teaching in an increasingly hostile environment. Vincent Kemi, the secretary for this year's Congress, spoke of the challenges facing physicians in the workplace.
Well, of course, in the Western world, this introduction of relativism and moral subjectivism is changed completely the profession of the doctor, where the doctor was someone to heal, to comfort, to give care. If there's no healing possible, to look after, to give care at least. Now he has become like an instrument to do more or less whatever the patient wants. That goes from plastic surgery in all kind of forms to gender change operations like hormone treatment or surgical interventions. Though there is a whole new mindset that introduced, which is doesn't consider the patient anymore or the human being as an image of God, as we used to believe in the Western Christian, so-called Christian world. We're living in a post-Christian time. There is no God anymore, and humanity decides for itself what we feel is best, and the physicians, medical world is supposed to work with this tendency and to answer to all these questions and fantasies that people have about themselves, and they must apply that. And that's basic, philosophically, a whole other kind of looking at mankind, at the human person, at the human being.
Hello and welcome to this week's Vaticano Updates, the most important news from the Holy Father and the Vatican. Cardinal Konrad Krajewski, Pope Francis's representative in Ukraine, was shot at on Saturday as he delivered humanitarian aid near the city of Zaporizhia, as Vatican News reported. The report said Krajewski was not hurt. The incident happened while the Polish-born cardinal was bringing food and other supplies to people stuck in a no-man's land on the front lines. According to a Reuters report citing an unnamed Vatican official, Pope Francis expressed his availability to meet with Chinese President Xi Jinping while both men were in Kazakhstan this week, but China declined. The source said the Vatican made an expression of availability, and the Chinese side said that they appreciated the gesture, but that there was no free time in Xi's schedule. The Holy Father told journalists on the papal plane from Rome to Kazakhstan on September 13th, "I'm always ready to go to China." Archbishop Paul Gallagher was Pope Francis's representative at the funeral of Queen Elizabeth II. The Queen's funeral took place at Westminster Abbey in London on September 19th. Queen Elizabeth II was the longest reigning monarch in British history and died at the age of 96 on September 8th. As British monarch, she was also the titular head of the Church of England, which separated from the Catholic Church in the 16th century. The Vatican will hold a contest to choose the original musical composition for the official hymn of the Catholic Church's 2025 Jubilee year. The contest will open for submissions early next year. The text is titled Pilgrims of Hope, after the theme of the 2025 Jubilee. According to the regulations set out by the Vatican, the musical composition should include a score for voice and organ and be able to be sung both by church congregations and by four-part church choirs. On his flight back to Rome from Kazakhstan, Pope Francis announced that he would finally visit South Sudan and Congo in February. Due to the health problems, the visit of this country's plan for this year had to be postponed. The Holy Father is also studying a possible trip to Bahrain in November. Thank you for watching this week's Vaticano Updates. My name is Benjamin Crockett for EWTN Vaticano.
In a few moments, we'll be back with more on Vaticano. On September the 1st, the Vatican implemented a new financial investment policy stating that Holy See investments cannot contradict Catholic teaching. Policy stipulates that Vatican investments should be aligned with the teachings of the Catholic Church, with specific exclusions for financial investments which contradict its fundamental principles, such as the sanctity of life or the dignity of the human being or the common good. In order to find out more about Pope Francis's reform of Vatican finances and the importance of these new changes, we spoke to Father Christian Mendoza, professor at the Pontifical University of the Holy Cross in Rome, who teaches on the financial dimensions of the Church.
Father Guerrero, the prefect of the Secretariat for the Economy, announced that now the Vatican will have this new policy investment that at the end is like taking into consideration where the investments are done. This is happening in many other realities, and also other states are investing a lot in sustainability, ecology, and governance, which means that the investments should have a very positive impact in these fields. Now, the Vatican, when they decide to do this, what they say is that basically they will not invest in anything that is against church teaching, like abortion or contraception, or maybe weapons and things that could maybe give revenue, but are against this idea of development.
The guidelines say that the investments of the Holy See and related entities should aim to contribute to a more just and sustainable world and generate sufficient return in a sustainable way. We asked Father Christian Mendoza to help us understand better how the temporal goods of the Church are handled by the Holy See.
Usually what happens is that the temporal goods that handled to the Holy See are very limited. You know that the Holy See receives money from especially the museums and also some donations that they get. What happens now is that they are trying to have more transparency and a better organization of the money they have. And this is very positive because they're very attentive to the few resources they have. If you consider the wealth of the Vatican to the wealth of just one of the big Catholic universities in America, you would know that one big Catholic university, like the University of Notre Dame, has more money in their endowment than the Vatican would have in their financial endowment. That's why it is true that in the past, what happened is that the administration of these temporal goods in the Vatican were done, as always, like in a more familiar way. And now, with all these reform, what they're getting is to make it more professional.
To find out more about the history of how the Church makes investments and organizes its finances, we spoke to Michael Severance, director of the Instituto Acton, the Roman chapter of the Acton Institute, an international think tank focused on promoting a free and virtuous society.
For most of us, it's a no-brainer that the Church, in terms of its investments, has to be consistent with its fundamental ethical principles drawn up in the tradition of the Catholic social magisterium. Everything goes back to Catholic social teaching. You know, the Catholic social teaching tradition starts with a praise of private property. It was Leo XIII in the late 19th century, and Issuing Brevium Novarum defended private property. Private property is the whole basis of market activity. Private property, in the literal sense, is very much supported and invested in by the Vatican itself. It has over 5,000 real estate properties.
Under these reforms, Michael Severance explains, investments will be made through APSA, the Holy See's treasury and sovereign wealth manager, and overseen by an ethics committee of four financial professionals, headed by Cardinal Kevin Farrell.
So what the Vatican is doing today, under the guidance of Pope Francis and under the prefect of the Secretary of the Economy, Father Juan Antonio Guerrero, they are tightening up loose reins. And I don't mean reins in the sense of horses' reins. I mean reins in the sense of fiefdoms or small little kingdoms or principalities. So the dicasteries over the years have their own reserve funds and had sometimes privileged access to invest their funds under their own discretion with some oversight within APSA and the apostolic administration that oversees investment properties. But now the Pope is really bringing in these loose reins, these loose kingdoms, into one centralized oversight committee that is now steered by Cardinal Kevin Farrell, the Irish American, and four lay professionals in the investment world. And this is perfectly in line also with Catholic social tradition to, and generally, promote prudence and temperance in terms of our economic activities, to not be caught by the bright lights of high profit, but to remain sustainable in our activities.
This new policy, which continues Pope Francis's reform of Vatican finances, has gone into effect as of September the 1st. There will be a one-year grace period for Vatican entities to divest of existing investments not in conformity with these new policies. September the 23rd marked 54 years since the death of the man who more than anyone else experienced the great mystery of pain, Padre Pio of Pietrelcina, Saint Pio. Known as an exceptional confessor, Padre Pio has made a deep mark on the history of the church.
Going to Padre Pio for confession was worse than taking a high school graduation exam. We knew that Padre Pio read our innermost selves, that he knew everything we had done, that he knew all our misbehavior. So we would always approach confession with a little trepidation, because Padre Pio spoke his mind. He would throw people out of the confessional without any problem. But in confession, Padre Pio was perfect. When you went to confession, he wanted you to make a holy confession. Then he would lean his head close to the door of the confessional and ask you what you wanted.
Dopo si avvicinava con la testa allo sportello e ti chiedeva che cosa volevi.
Francesco Forgione, the baptismal name of the future Padre Pio, was born on May the 25th, 1887, in Pietrelcina, in a small province in southern Italy. His parents, Grazio Forgione and Maria Giuseppa De Nunzio, were small landowners. At the tender age of 10, Francesco expressed the desire to become a monk. His father, Grazio, in order to allow him to follow his vocation and study, had to immigrate to the United States. On January the 6th, 1903, at the age of 16, Francesco finally entered the novitiate of the Capuchin friars, taking the name Brother Pio. After 6 years of studies, he was ordained a priest. But it was on September the 20th, 1918, that his life changed forever. On that day in San Giovanni Rotondo, where he'd been living for some time, he received the gift of the stigmata on his hands, side, and feet. The mystery of Padre Pio attracted the attention of public opinion, which was often shrouded in slander and controversy. For this reason, the Holy See decided to issue a restrictive measure against him, which led Padre Pio to a strict enclosure for 2 years. A period during which he was forbidden to hear confessions, celebrate Mass in public, and maintain any correspondence with the faithful. Maria Teresa also recalls Padre Pio's hard struggle against the temptations of the evil one.
He was tormented by the devil. While you were confessing, he was never still. He was moving all the time. I understood later. I don't know what horrible things the devil was saying to him. Padre Pio was constantly banging his head against the confessional wall as if he wanted to send away a bad thought, like swatting a fly. He was continuously tortured.
Despite the controversy, curiosity, and debates, Padre Pio's life over the next 50 years remained the same. A life of intense and exhausting prayer.
To embrace the guidance of a saint, to be followed by him, his spiritual assistance, I cannot explain with words everything that Padre Pio gave to my husband and to me. He has given us so much.
Padre Pio died on September the 23rd, 1968, and was canonized in St. Peter's Square by Pope St. John Paul II in June of 2002. Every year, millions of pilgrims come to San Giovanni Rotondo to pay homage and ask for the intercession of Padre Pio, the humble friar who lived the spirituality of the cross on his body. We'll be back after a short break with more on Vaticano. Kazakhstan is an enormous country in the heart of the Eurasian continent. It's made up of diverse landscapes that hold a vast array of peoples, faiths, and languages that have come, passed, and remained. Far from the world's metropolises, despite a tiny number of Catholics, just 1% of the 17 million person population, Pope Francis has chosen to visit this country. This is where leaders from the world's religions will gather, bringing more than 130 delegations from 58 countries.
Many years ago, when there was the ancient Silk Road, Kazakhstan was a bridge between different cultures and different nations, civilizations. And of course, that fact impacted our people, our nation. And even nowadays, you can see that we have a lot of nations living in Kazakhstan in peace and accord. So the Congress is somehow the reflection of our history and current policy.
We begin in northern Kazakhstan on an island of the Catholic faith at the shrine of Our Lady Queen of Peace in the village of Odzernoye. Rector of the shrine, Father Mariusz Stawacz, walks us to the lake that's a witness of a great famine during World War II and an abundance of graces from Our Lady.
Here, the people were praying through the intercession of the Blessed Virgin Mary for help. And on March 25th, 1941, a miracle occurred. The temperature rose and the snow melted and filled this place near the village, forming a lake. The appearance of the lake may have been a cyclical phenomenon, but the miraculous thing was that the lake appeared with an abundance of fish.
Now the village of Odzernoye has become the home to the only Marian shrine that shines for the whole Central Asian region, including Mongolia and Afghanistan.
I think it is already the fruit of the parish of the Queen of Peace. Many people who come here say that it is very peaceful. Indeed, Mary the Queen of Peace reigns here and fills our hearts with it.
On another side of the village, Carmelite sister Elizabeth, together with four other sisters, unceasingly prays for peace in front of the Blessed Sacrament. They formed a community here 15 years ago.
We get a great peace in our hearts here. You could say that we are sheltered with Jesus in the tabernacle. It gives us a chance to be close to the heart of Jesus, and together with him, we pray for all peoples and each person. We pray for these people who suffer, but we must also offer a lot of prayers and sacrifices for the people who cause the suffering, so that at the last moment, they say, "I'm sorry, I did this. But now I ask for forgiveness."
The nuns say that even in times of darkness, there's nothing irreversible for God, who showers his graces down at this lake.
On the 100th anniversary of the apparitions of Our Lady of Fatima, the miracle with the fish repeated. There were so many fish, it drew people here from different cities to go fishing.
Sister Elizabeth says the recent repetition of the miracle reminds us that Our Lady dwells here in the land of Kazakhstan.